And a very good morning to you. Adam Lepp back for the second of two shows that I do on Tuesday morning. Two for Tuesday of sorts. Last hour we talked about technology, research into human brains, some human resources occurrences at Amazon, the Snapchat update, and of course, like any show that I do on this station, an obligatory wisecracker two or three or even more. This hour, we have a different topic on the agenda, different way of doing things. This show is more political and current events oriented. And oftentimes, our resident political analyst, presidential expert, and all-around interesting historical scholar, Dr. Ronald L. Fineman, joins me. We're going to talk about presidential popularity polls, both the President Donald and recent presidents like both Bushes and Carter and a few others. Also on the agenda will be an analysis of Scott Spears and his interview with very controversial political candidate Art Jones from Illinois. Art Jones is thought by many people to be a Nazi. He is a Holocaust denier. So a controversial gentleman is very passionate about his beliefs. Interviewed by Scott Spears yesterday. The interview is available on our website at WWGH1071.com. If you didn't catch it yesterday, I encourage you to listen on demand. It was interesting, to say the least. Well, Dr. Fineman and I will be discussing that interview on the show. Don't want to miss the next hour. It is radio worth listening to on The Talking Place, FM 107.1 in the Marion area, and broadcasting online all over the great world we live in, over the internet, WWGH1071.com. Adam Lepp! Last week was a banner week on the station. Not really for my show. I mean, we have Dr. Fineman on. We often have Nick or Brandon on and provide computer news and world events, politics. So my show isn't too bad, but when you have Dr. Ruth, Lieutenant Governor and gubernatorial hopeful Mary Taylor, and of course, the professor, Dr. Ronald Fineman, on in the same show, I'm not sure it's possible to beat that, and that's what we did last Thursday. We had Dr. Ron and then Dr. Ruth. And speaking of Dr. Ron, he's on the phone with me right now in Florida, where it's probably 80 degrees and sunny and swimsuit weather. So before we go into today's topics, and I kind of hinted around about the diversity of our guests, and I think yesterday we broke that record once again, but, you know, Scott Spears, never quite know what he has up his sleeve, and his sleeve was quite interesting yesterday. We'll discuss that for a bit. When you were on with Scott last Thursday, Ron, again, thanks again for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you for inviting me again, yes.
Dr. Ron Fineman from Boca Raton in sunny, warm southern Florida, professor, blogger, author, and all-around interesting person with a Doctor of Philosophy degree. So just like Donald Trump, he's like real smart and like real well-educated, but we'll get back to that. what do you think, Ron, about being on the same show with the legendary Dr. Ruth, 89 years old, 4'7", and as feisty as ever. Was that cool or not?
That was fantastic. She is an amazing lady, and I think she's going to make it to 100 at the rate she's going, and I think it's great. You know, I think it's just fantastic. She is so alert and alive, and I want to be that way when I reach 89.
Yeah, I mean, she sounds the same, again, as feisty as ever. The way that she has just brought sex in a respectable way. Not the sleazy way that it's often portrayed and often thought of, but in a respectable adult, intellectual, if not geeky way into our living rooms is just amazing. And again, if there aren't a lot of people that I idolize, but she's on that list. So every inch.
See, I want to add a suggestion that Betty White should be involved. It should be invited on the show.
Betty White is certainly one of my idols also, 96 years old and still beautiful.
I mean,
she's always
now.
Been beautiful, but she is a really character actress, one who can play any number of roles and be funny. And her spontaneity is off the charts. And I don't think she's lost anything since her days as Sue Ann Nivens on the Mary Tyler Moore Show. And hopefully we'll hear more from her and see more of her on TV everywhere else. It's just a joy, an American legend. And again, just like Dr. Ruth, there aren't a lot of people that I idolize, but those two fine ladies, fine, beautiful ladies, are on that list. Also, Ron,
yes.
We had Lieutenant Governor Mary Taylor last week with Scott. We had the gubernatorial candidate that I've pretty much made public I'm probably going to vote for, former undefeated Jeopardy champion, a gentleman who's held many offices nationally and statewide, Rich Cordray. He was on with Scott. So we present a lot of political viewpoints and invite people to make their decision or whom they think is the best candidate, even if you're not an Ohioan. And you get our resident political expert, professor, historian, and person with great opinions, Dr. Ronald Fineman, joining me again today, and we're going to be discussing some of those items. So anyway, Ron, as I mentioned, I'm not sure too many stations have the diversity of guests that we do. Last Thursday, from a coolness factor, Mary Taylor, then you, and then Dr. Ruth. But yesterday, Scott may have outdone himself, and I'm not sure that that's possible, but he breaks his own record, seems like, every week. First hour, we had a lady who has been on many TV shows and on the radio. She's on with Scott at least once a month. Someone whose views we would probably agree with, Eleanor Clift. Again,
oh, absolutely. She's a delight.
Yeah. Right. Intelligent. And again, someone with a certain bias to the left, but not one who's going to shove that in your face. She presents her views and make your own decision. And she's so erudite and knowledgeable. I mean, nothing that woman doesn't really know. If you have to listen to what she says and make your own opinion. I don't agree with everything she says, but I certainly admire her knowledge and how well she speaks. Plus, her New York accent's kind of cool. We like hearing that from time to time. But then the second hour, Ron, he had a very different guest. And this guest was a gentleman that we spoke about on our show last week, Art Jones, running for the 3rd District in the great state of Illinois. And he is a Republican, but he isn't too popular with his Republican colleagues in Illinois. And you might ask, well, why is that the case? And we have Donald Trump, who is pretty different from a lot of Republicans. And as we've talked about before, he used to be a Democrat. He's essentially an independent, but again, in a general sense, and I do say in general, because even our Republican governor doesn't feel this way, but Republicans do tend to support him. As like any politician, he has some extreme views, but in many ways he is still a Republican and faithful to that party. But that isn't the case with Art Jones. He is not popular really with the mainstream Republicans, which he has called by that affectionate nickname Rhinos, Republicans in name only. And the reason why is he is believed to be a Nazi and someone with very extreme views and racist views, views that are not acceptable. In 2018, or weren't acceptable any time in history. Yesterday, Ron, when I told you that he was going to be on, after we had discussed it last week, we both listened. And as we were listening, we were kind of messaging back and forth as to what we thought. I certainly congratulate Scott on keeping his composure. I can't believe how calm, cool, and collected he was. And he doesn't let anybody intimidate him. He always is in control of the conversation, and all I can say is, as much as I like Geraldo and Chris Hansen and the late Andy Rooney, Dan Rather, I think Scott is in their class, and in many ways is better, as you and I also discussed. Ron,
yeah, I think it's one of the best interviews I've ever listened to. Really, he's outstanding.
Exactly,
he really is.
As a member of the Jewish religion, Ron, what did you think about the discussion with R. Jones? Were you very much offended by it? Were you just wondering how somebody could have such extreme views? Did you throw your hands up in disgust? What was kind of your main reaction to the show?
Well, I was disgusted by it, but this is part of living in the world as a Jewish person, that you come across people like this. And thank God they're not in power, that they cannot do what happened in World War II. But, I mean, we do have freedom of speech, and he has a right to have his views, and he's going to be on the ballot, but the Republican Party has repudiated him, and he is in a district that's mostly Democratic anyway, so he would not get more than probably 15% of the vote. But even that bothers me, that a person like that with those kind of views, for him to bring up about the America First Committee and Charles Lindbergh, 1940-41, is astounding, and his statements are clearly racist, nativist, anti-Semitic. He is clearly a despicable human being, but in a free country, he has a right to his views. We cannot censor him, and I'm glad that Scott had him on so we could see him for who he was.
So you and I both are major supporters of free speech, and really, yes, not going to find anybody who's going to agree fully with your views. You and I don't agree on many views, but we're still friends. We still shake hands at the end, and our differences aren't to the extreme, certainly. As a historian, Ron, again, as I said, you're like very smart with a PhD, and so you certainly know what you're talking about, regardless of where your individual slant might be. Mr. Jones brought up some new terms. We were both intrigued by the new one called racialist, not to be confused with racist.
You know, people, yes.
Now, he's had the white nationalists on, and we've talked about nationalists. Does the racialist sound a bit like a nationalist? Is he saying he's a white racialist, saying he's not prejudiced, but he says he has a right to be white, and had an issue with the fact that whites may be a minority sometime in our lifetime, and that's
well, they will be because of the reality of reproduction and immigration. I mean, you know, by 2040s, we will have the white majority will be less than 50%, so they will not be the largest group, but not the majority anymore. That's the reality of the Census Bureau based on patterns that have been going on for about 20, 30 years.
Now, the white racialism, how do you, and again, Ron, I'll let you discuss this because I don't feel I'm knowledgeable enough for it, as I'm sure you are. How does the racialism differentiate from nationalism? Is it just the word for the same thing, or is there some subtle difference between those two philosophies?
I think it's just a cover for white nationalism. And the thing that gets me is, I know he doesn't want to hear it, but Jews are white, unless they're from the Middle East. But I mean, most Jews are from Europe, and they are white. I consider myself white. I do not have a problem with the idea that in the future that so-called whites will not be the majority. I think diversity is a plus. And I don't have a problem with the reality that people from Latin America and from Asia and from Africa, as far as heritage, will be not the majority, but will be a majority together. And I think it makes us a stronger nation in the long run. I have never had a problem with that issue. But I don't understand people who have problems with interracial marriage either, which only became legal and constitutional in the case Loving v. Virginia in 1967. In my mind, whoever people want to marry is their own business, and it really is not an issue about what people's races or religions or even genders are. And I just think people spend too much time on this, and really it's none of your damn business, I would always say to people. And just go about your business, do what you want, but do not, you know, go ahead and make an issue of other people's love lives and who they want to date and who they want to spend time with. But this is the way it is. We have people who want to take away people's rights, and that I'm very much opposed to.
I didn't really hear him talk about being Christian, which we often hear from other groups.
No, actually, he didn't. You're right. He did not mention that.
And yes.
I'm surprised. Boy, now that you mentioned him, you know, I realize he did not use that word. No.
Which is interesting. So there are subtle differences, but there are certainly close cousins, again, being nationalism and racialism. And he's had two well-known white nationalists on in the last several months. So again, Scott is not shy about providing guests with diverse opinions. We're not saying we agree with the opinions. We ask you to listen and make up your own decisions. And if nothing else, his show stimulate a few brain cells. And the fact that Scott can get these guests on is wonderful. That's what's great about radio. Listen to what they have to say.
Richard Spencer?
It was Jared and Jason were the two white nationalists that were recently on.
Oh, so not Richard Spencer. I thought Richard Spencer was on. Okay, sorry.
Right, but Scott has had many guests on with viewpoints that we may agree with, may not agree with, or may partially agree with, and he's not afraid to challenge guests, and that's what reporting is all about. I've had people who have put on Facebook and say, well, you have this guest on, why are you endorsing white nationalism? We're not endorsing it. We're talking to the person. And Scott's even said during the interview that this gentleman's views are not the same as his. But we respect his opinion and free speech. Freedom of the press is one of the great things about America. I mean, we all love our country, but we certainly express it in very, very different ways. And we don't want to twist that with some kind of a prejudice. And that's, for lack of a better term, kind of the basis of why we provide these great talk shows and differing opinions from our guests. And we invite our listeners to make their own judgment and share it with us on Facebook, on their own blogs, or then call the station. There are many ways to get in touch. So, Ron, we talked last week that the district that Mr. Jones is running in is heavily Democratic. Now, he did mention that it's at least 80% white, a small number of Jewish people that live there also. And I think he twisted things a bit in saying, well, it's 80% white, so he has a pretty good base. But you and I are white. We don't agree with what he has to say. And so I think that was rather fallacious. Did you kind of get that opinion? Or what were your thoughts when you heard him talk about those statistics?
Well, he likes to distort facts, and that's nothing new. We live in a world where alternative facts are thought to be true, and they're not. And we're getting a lot of that from our president and people around him. And now we have this person who's far worse than Trump, even, who's spreading alternative facts. But hopefully anybody who's intelligent will realize the truth of it all.
A couple things he did mention, Ron, and again, as a presidential expert, you certainly are more qualified than I. He talked about President Lincoln, and that Lincoln indicated he was not in favor of interracial marriage. Well, back in those days, I'm not sure anybody was. The definition of marriage has changed, and that gets into the same-sex marriage discussion also. Marriage was originally for reproduction, and people didn't really marry not only outside their race, but outside their own ancestry. Like an Irish person wouldn't marry an Italian. And
that's true.
Marriages were arranged. They weren't for love. Well, now it's for love, and as long as you're consenting adults, whether you're black and white, Asian and black, man and man, woman and woman, man and woman, what have you. That's okay, because it has evolved. And that also gets into the argument about, well, maybe Lincoln said this and we all love President Lincoln. Well, it isn't quite that simple. Also, the people that are against same-sex marriage were saying, well, if a man can marry a man, well, can I marry my dog, or can I have a three-way marriage? No, it's not the same thing. Well, but people have said that. And no, I'm not in favor of marrying your dog, and I'm not in favor of having a three-way marriage. However, what we were saying is two consenting adults, and so we're not talking about your own gender or your own race, but things were different even back during Abraham Lincoln's days. Now, Ron, as someone who certainly has studied this, what exactly is the bottom line to the argument, well, Abraham Lincoln said he was against interracial marriage? What would be your comeback to that?
Well, first of all, that's 150 years ago. He did evolve on race quite a bit, and he did, after all, promote the Emancipation Proclamation and the 13th Amendment. He probably, I guess, from what I've read, did not think that Negroes, as they would call them then, were equal to whites, but that was standard at the time. It's taken a long time for people to change, but I don't hold him responsible from 150, 160 years ago for today, and I do think he would have a very different view, and he would applaud Martin Luther King Jr. and others if he was here today. But to take someone out of their own context and put them into the present time is, I think, not very smart, and it doesn't really prove anything. It's really changing, really harming the image of that person that he's speaking about, because he distorts the reality of it's a long time ago, and you can't go by what's a long time ago and say nothing should change. And he also brought up about the Constitution, and yet he wanted to change the Constitution, which he says he loves, you know, because he wanted to have judges, you know, indeed having only 8 years in office. And so, I mean, whether you agree with that or not, he first says he wants to follow the Constitution literally, and then he doesn't want to follow it. And, you know, it's just amazing to me. His ignorance is very clear.
So he is certainly twisting the facts. And as I mentioned, back in the mid-1800s, pretty much nobody was in favor of interracial marriage or same-sex marriage. Things have evolved. And again, because marriage wasn't necessarily for love, it was arranged, and people were expected to be from the opposite gender, but the similar demographic. Again, we would think nothing about an Italian person marrying an Irish person, even if they're both both white and one's a man, one's a woman. But that was actually different 150, 200 years ago. And even President Lincoln, again, would have a view coincident with that. So things have evolved. That kind of be the best way to explain it. Again, I'm giving a layman's opinion, Ron. You're the person with the presidential knowledge. But does that pretty much sum it up, that views have evolved, and also that what was a general feeling about something, especially in this case marriage, was quite different than it is today?
Yes, and of course, it's just like looking at presidents and the issue of race. Lyndon Johnson was brought up in a segregated society. Harry Truman was. They certainly were accustomed to it, but they both made major civil rights changes in their time in office because they grew. And I think if Lincoln had lived another 50 years, which of course wasn't going to be true, but if he had lived in a different era, he would have had different views than he had back in the 1850s and 1860s. So it's hard to take someone out of their own time frame and somehow make them to be in the modern period. But then we look at people who do go through change, like LBJ and Truman, and they really do, they really do advance America in that, in that kind of a way.
So Mr. Jones did twist some of the logic and didn't really give the entire story. And that's something we do need to delineate and make clear. But again, we admire his tenacity, even though we don't agree with what he has to say by any means. And we appreciate him coming on the show. It certainly was interesting. And again, especially having Eleanor Clift the first hour. I'm sorry to sound arrogant, but I'm so proud of being with the station and the varying viewpoints that we offer. We invite our listeners to tune in, listen to the repeats, look at our website, read our Facebook and the tweets that Scott and I put on Twitter. I mean, we don't sit there at 3 a.m. and tweet like a certain president does, but we certainly do use it from time to time, and we invite the listeners to make their own opinions and participate. Again, make responses.
Yeah, I want to say again, I congratulate both you and Scott for your great work at WWGH, and I think it's a great radio station, and everybody should listen to it, because it really does offer a lot of different alternatives, and I'm very proud myself to be associated with WWGH.
Well, that's quite kind of you, Professor, and we certainly appreciate taking your time out of your schedule to talk with us. Before we change topics, anything else you wanted to share with our listeners about your impression of the Art Jones interview yesterday?
Well, I would just say that I would not really be interested in meeting with him personally. I heard enough on the radio. He's a pretty despicable human being. He has a right to his views, but I certainly would not say, let's go out for coffee.
Okay, that probably would sum it up. But again, you certainly are... you certainly would enjoy going out for coffee or just hanging with friends with someone to, again, who may not have the same views on abortion or gay rights or immigration, as long as the views certainly are within mainstream. But Art Jones's views certainly were well out of mainstream.
Well, this denial of the Holocaust and thinking it really didn't happen, that's outrageous beyond belief. Yes, he's outside the norms. That's correct.
Again, as a Jewish person, Ron, how would somebody deny that? I just, you know, again, maybe I don't fully understand, but it's part of history. What is there to deny?
Well, I don't know what there is to deny, because there's photographic evidence, there's video evidence, there's the survivors, there's all the stuff that has been gathered by the Shoah, S-H-O-A-H project, and all that. I don't know how anybody could, but it's just like David Duke still denies it. You know, the man who ran for governor and senator in Louisiana and is now in his 70s and is still spewing forth poison and has his followers. And, of course, I remember George H.W. Bush repudiated him back in 1991 when he ran for governor of Louisiana, and, you know, he refused to endorse him. He was the Republican nominee, but the first Bush was very honorable in speaking out against him in a public statement, you know, and actually in front of all the news people. It wasn't like it was just a statement released. He actually came out and gave the statement. So this is the kind of leadership I admire. And again, the man has a right to his views, but how anybody could deny the Holocaust is unbelievable. It really is. It is just spewing forth hatred and trying to find ignorant people who will believe it. And there are always those who do. That's the problem. So we have to continue to educate, because in the future there will not be survivors of the Holocaust, but we still have to continue with the Holocaust museums and all kinds of education to indeed make sure that people understand the truth of the past.
So the George H.W. Bush example is one where you don't believe, you don't agree with most of his views, but admire him as a man, and repudiating this person with such extreme viewpoints is the right thing to
do. Well, I mean, with George H.W. Bush, I do agree, actually, with quite a few things he did. I'm concerned now about the movement to cut back on the disability laws that were passed under him in 1990. He was really an advocate of that. And I am concerned that now the government under Trump seems to be moving in the direction of cutting back on the enforcement, as they are in so many other things. So that really worries me. And honestly, I think that if this man, Arthur Jones, is the only person on the ballot for the Republican Party, and therefore is the nominee, I think Donald Trump should come out and make a statement condemning him, like George H.W. Bush did about David Duke, but I'm not willing to bet he will. So, although he will not maybe endorse him by not attacking him, it is sort of like a silent endorsement. I think he needs to make a statement on Arthur Jones if he is the actual Republican nominee in November.
So you and I would be of the viewpoint that it's the president's duty, something we expect our president to do, to denounce a candidate with extreme, very prejudiced views that are not coincident with any reasonable person in our great country. But you're of the belief that he's not going to do that.
I would be quite amazed if he did between now and November, but I bet there'll be pressure, at least public pressure, brought on him that he should, and he'll just ignore it like he ignores whatever he wants to ignore. But he should take the stand that George H.W. Bush did, because that is the right stand to take.
So actually, among recent presidents, Ron, George H.W. Bush may be one of your favorite Republicans. Would that possibly be a true statement?
Well, more than his son and more than Ronald Reagan. As far as, I like Reagan as a person, but as far as policies, no, not as much. So I would say H.W. Bush and Ford are the two more recent presidents of Republicans who I really admire, particularly Ford. I really do admire Gerald Ford more and more as time goes by.
And you mentioned about the ADA, and that's a good topic. And we've gone through about two-thirds of the show and not talked much about President Trump, because the interview with Mr. Jones was so eye-opening, and I really wanted your opinion, and we really appreciate you sharing it with us. And again, we invite our listeners to provide their own opinion, whether or not you agree with us. Our website, our Facebook, tweet it. We'd love to hear what you have to say. That's what talk radio is all about, and differing opinions are a good thing, and that's what the free press, the freedom of the speech, freedom of expression, that's what makes the United States the best country in the world, as far as I'm concerned. So anyway, the ADA, which George H.W. Bush had a lot to do with, and it's celebrating, goodness sakes, almost its 30-year anniversary. Is there a danger of loosening these important laws under the Trump administration, and what's the repercussions if that happens?
It's clear that that's the way it's moving from what I see in news reports, and I think that's alarming. Because disabled people need the protection of the law, and it needs to be enforced. And it's not, I think it may very well be loosened up, as all kinds of regulations are being loosened up, as this government is trying to indeed reverse everything they can of Republican and Democratic presidents going back as far back as Theodore Roosevelt on the environment, and moving forward from that point on. And it's very disturbing. And at the same time, we have President Eisenhower, who was asked back in the 50s about the idea of a military parade, and he said, no way, because that's what the Soviet Union does, and we should not do that. But of course, Donald Trump, I got George H.W. Bush in the mind, Donald Trump indeed seems to want a military parade, and it's going to cost a lot of money. It's a waste of money, and it should not be held, but I have a feeling it's going to occur anyway, and set a bad example that will probably have to be followed in the future. And I do not see a need for that, because we have, do local parades on Veterans Day and Memorial Day. We always have honoring of the military at Arlington National Cemetery twice a year. There is no need for this. And this is something Eisenhower, based on what he said in the 50s, would be alarmed by right now if he was alive.
Well, one thing about Trump is that he doesn't discriminate, and by that I mean he will attempt to water down or remove legislation that was an important part of Democratic and Republican presidencies, which, again, isn't a good thing.
That's true, and that's tragic. And at the same time, he wants people to applaud him, and he says the Democrats committed treason by not applauding his State of the Union speech, and yet they didn't applaud the Republicans, the Obama speech, and you know, Democrats didn't applaud George W. and all that. I mean, there's no requirement. This is not a dictatorship, so that worries me too, that whole concept of treason being brought up by him, when others think he has committed treason by his dealings with the Russians and his refusal to ever criticize Putin.
Right, well, that's part of freedom of the press and freedom of speech. You don't have to applaud. You can say you don't like Donald Trump, and that's opinion you have a right to have. And I think he is definitely confusing a few things. And interestingly, with the military parade, and we're not trying to twist things. Again, we talked about Art Jones and the way he twists logic, twists history. But saying we don't want a military parade doesn't mean we don't support the military. And that's where we need to make a very strong point. And the one, I think the best way to show that is President Eisenhower, a Republican, a general in the United States Army. He wasn't in favor of it. He thought it was unnecessary and it was a waste of money. And that's pretty much how I feel. And Donald Trump seems to have a very different viewpoint. And honestly, I don't quite understand. It's tricky. You don't want to think that you don't support the military, but this isn't really the way to do it. I'm not sure what else there is to say about it. It's kind of an aggravating issue.
He wants to have everybody applaud him. He's doing it for himself. He's not doing it for the military. And the idea of having tanks and nuclear weapons on the streets of Washington, D.C. as part of the parade, which is apparently the idea in mind, I think is horrendous. That's terrible. That's the kind of thing that goes on in North Korea or in China or in the past in the Soviet Union. It should not be going on in the United States in the future.
So once again, his arrogance, the fact that he's the president of the Donald J. Trump fan club, is getting the best
yes,
of him.
I guess that's what he is, the head of it. But also, I want to pick up before we leave, there's this issue of ICE. And what ICE is doing about immigrants. It's one thing to go after immigrants that have broken the law, have committed crimes, but we've been seeing horror stories lately, as I pointed out in my blog. A doctor in Michigan, a college professor in Kansas, an Afghanistan Army veteran from Illinois, all facing deportation, breaking up of their families. And it's just, this is not what I think is the enforcement of immigration. I think this is crazy. These people came as children. They've been here for, you know, decades. They've performed well. They've done good deeds in professions and in other things. They've been in the military. And it's just shocking to me what's going on. And more of these stories every day.
We are speaking with Dr. Ron Fineman from Southern Florida, blogger, professor, author, regular guest on my show. And sometimes he's on Scott's show, like last Thursday when he was on, prior to the legendary Dr. Ruth Westheimer. That was a great day in Marion radio, if not radio for the entire solar system, as far as I'm concerned. So here I am, little old me, Adam, the computer guy, and other hats that I wear, speaking with Dr. Fineman, and we appreciate his viewpoints, his opinions, and always an entertaining and educational time. What I've learned in my friendship with him and having him on the show can't put a price tag on that. So Ron, your blog is called theprogressiveprofessor.com, and some of your recent entries relate to the popularity rating of Donald Trump versus popularity ratings of other presidents. Now, the least popular after Trump is one that you and I have talked about. Again, one that we think has been underrated and is getting more appreciation as time goes on. That would be Gerald R. Ford. 44% in favor after 1 year and 39% opposed. But with President Trump, in January, it was 40% in favor, 55% opposed. And some comparisons. We talked about Eisenhower, 71%. 4-18 against George W. Bush, 81 and 13, even ahead of Kennedy at 79 and 10. So looks like Donald Trump, though he has his supporters, again, 40% in favor isn't terrible, but 55% are opposed and 5%, I guess, kind of aren't quite sure. So what do you make about that? Do you think it's going to continue to get worse for Trump? Will it maybe get better, or What's
Well, he's in negative territory, no matter what the number that's for him. I do not think he'll ever be in positive. All the others were, some of them did fall down later on, like the second Bush, even the first Bush, LBJ had troubles, Nixon had troubles, Carter had troubles, Truman. But after 1 year, every single one of them was in positive territory, and of course they ranged from, indeed, from 5 points for Ford, which I think we think it was hurt by the Nixon pardon, all the way up to Kennedy with a 69% positive side compared to negative, 79 to 10, everybody else in between. Usually after a year, a president will have still positives, although Ford had less. But the fact is that he's never been in positive territory, and I don't think he ever will. And now he's got all this disarray over John Kelly and over the dismissal of these different people under him who were abusing their wives or ex-wives, and his whole thing about not really wanting to ever criticize any man for the way they treat their women in their life. And I think women are going to come out in droves, except for the church types that will still vote for him because the husbands say it. But I think a majority of women are going to come out in outrage this November, and the Republican Party is going to really suffer because they're not speaking out against what he's doing and what he's saying regarding women.
In taking a look, Ron, at these approval ratings after 1 year, George W. Bush is number one, 81%, which is a lot, 4 out of 5. If you're a president and more than 4 out of 5 people think you're doing a good job, that is a feather in your cap, to put it mildly. Was it because of 9/11?
That's September 11th. That's the effect of September 11th.
9/11, the aftermath. 9/11 would have an influence on the high approval rating.
Absolutely. And, of course, 6 months later, it started to go down as we got involved in two wars and it wasn't going well. But the first year, for 3, 4, 6 months after, he was at a very high rating, yes. And I was hopeful then that he would continue, but it didn't work out that way.
I guess, interestingly enough, his rating started very high and then dropped, but he was still reelected. What do you make of that?
Well, because we were in two wars, and the fact is every president that has had us at war, we've always reelected. It's never failed, and that's the concern. If Donald Trump hangs around and we have war with North Korea or Iran, if you go by history, he might have a chance to be reelected, or Pence if he took over. I would hope not, but it is possible based on history. We've always elected a president in wartime.
So, tragic events, 9/11 and the wars, those helped George W. Bush's reelection. It's kind of difficult to say that, isn't it?
Well, I mean, it was close, though. Ohio, interestingly, was the state that decided it, and there were some people who have contended that Ohio's vote was messed with, and it's never been proved. You know, there's been questions about Ohio, and they were saying that if the vote had been switched, you know, the way they saw it, there might have been a mistake made or something purposely done. Kerry would have won, even though he would have lost the popular vote. But look, Donald Trump and George W. Bush the first time lost the popular vote, but Kerry could have won if he had won Ohio, even though he would have still lost the popular vote. So there are some questions about 2004, but it's sort of like it died down.
In looking at, again, some of the presidents and their one-year approval, Jimmy Carter came in during the energy crisis. Vietnam War was still fresh in our minds, and of course the inflation, the gas lines, of the 20% interest rates. He was at 55, 4, and 27 against, and he never really recovered because he did lose the election to Reagan in 1980.
Well, he was high after 1 year because we hadn't reached the high inflation. That came in the 79 and 80. That's when things fell apart for him. He was doing well in 77, 78, but 79 and 80 with the Iranian Revolution, with the invasion of Afghanistan by the Soviet Union, and the second Arab oil embargo, which nobody could have stopped, actually, it caused inflation, high interest rates, and unemployment. So that's what really did him in. But this is 1978, so that's why he's rated so high at that point. But later, he really does lose out, yes.
So as we've talked about, Jimmy Carter is a good man and still alive in his 90s. Arguably, the best.
On March 16th, he will have passed Gerald Ford, so he will have passed both. He's already passed Reagan. He will have passed Gerald Ford, and therefore be longer lived than anyone except H.W. Bush, who, of course, is 111 days older. So the competition as to who outlived the other will continue.
So arguably, again, the best former president ever, but he was president during a very difficult time, had a hard presidency, and we admire his intelligence and is sticking with it. But unfortunately for Mr. Carter, he lost to Reagan in 1980, and at that time, the country became more conservative under the Reagan leadership. And as we've seen, it kind of goes in a bit of a seesaw effect.
Yes, I wanted to mention that Jimmy Carter did suggest months ago he was willing to go and negotiate with Kim Jong-un of North Korea. Never heard from Trump about it. I guess he doesn't want to ask him to go, but it might not be a bad idea, but he hasn't picked up on it yet.
Well, I think that would be a good idea, but I'm not too sure that the Donald agrees with either of us. But again, he surprises every day, so who knows? We'll talk again next week, and maybe it will be something different. John F. Kennedy, Ron, had a 79% approval and 10% who didn't approve, and that's pretty good. And
it was actually the highest in the sense, not the highest in total number, and Bush had 81, but actually in the as far as the minus, he was the lowest, only 10% low. You know, against, so that's amazing. Right. Well, Kennedy remained popular throughout his time, although he had his critics on the right wing side. But he did remain very popular. He had a way about him that nobody else quite has ever matched.
Yeah, I would agree. I think actually it's the second number. How many people do not approve? That's more important. It kind of reminds me, Ron. Again, you and I both being baseball fans, and spring training getting underway this week. How about that? Or winter training, I guess, if you're here in the Midwest. But they talk about the loss column, that when you look at rankings of baseball teams in a 162-game season, they really are concerned about how many losses you have, not how many wins or what your standing is or what your winning percentage is. And this is analogous. You know, maybe I'm being my over an analytic geeky self, but I would say that the second number, the disapproval number percentage, in Kennedy's case, only 1 out of 10. That's more important. And if you're U.S. president, a controversial, powerful office, we are under the microscope 25 hours a day. If only 1 in 10 people don't approve of the job you're doing, that is extremely good.
Unbelievable. I'm sure Trump would love that. But I think he could end up maybe not quite as low as 10, being, you know, indeed being in favor of not that low. But I'm saying that he is certainly, I think, going to decline over time the way things are going, because his turnaround as far as people around him is the highest of any president in the first year, and it's continuing now.
And with Trump, we have 55% who give him a definite thumbs down. And so looking at that number as the more important one, Kennedy, 10%. Thumbs down. Both Bushes in the low teens for thumbs down. Even Jimmy Carter, barely more than 1 out of 4, 27. Reagan, 40%. Or Obama, 43%. So it's not looking...
Only 15%. You know, yeah. That's when he was at his peak. Yeah.
It's not looking too good for the Donald right now. But again, there are always surprises, and who knows what might transpire. And that's what makes talk radio fun, as I've probably said a few too many times during this show. It's good to talk about what's occurring, whether or not you agree with a particular viewpoint, and we invite our listeners to make their own decisions.
Yeah, I wanted to mention one more thing before we go. Yesterday, at the National Portrait Gallery of the Smithsonian Institution, the official portraits of Barack Obama and Michelle Obama were revealed, and I saw it on C-SPAN, and I think they're very interesting portraits, and he's in a field of flowers, Barack Obama, and it's a very interesting very interesting portrait, and it was an interesting ceremony, so everybody should look and see the new portraits that are in the National Portrait Gallery of him and his wife.
Before we close out, Ron, did you see the photo of Trump? I think he was getting on a plane or something, and it's like his hair was
yes.
It was tousled to the side, and it's like you saw half of his scalp, and that certainly got a few rounds on social media, and a giggle or two out of my mouth.
Yes, well, because let's face it, it's a phony hairdo he has there. I think it's almost like maybe not a wig, but it seems like it mostly is a wig. Yes.
So we're not quite sure what the deal is with his hair, but I will say that Melania, her hair is always beautiful. You know, I do like Melania, and I find her to be quite the looker. And
I don't know why she stays with him, honestly, though.
If there was ever a Beauty and the Beast, I'm not sure that could be more in this case.
Oh my gosh, what a statement.
But always leave him laughing. So with that, Ron, we thank you for being on the show. Again, we laughed a bit. We talked about some serious topics, some statistics. That's hard to say even after a couple,
statistics, yeah, that's what you can slip on, yeah.
But, you know, as a math
teacher, today I was really big on George H.W. Bush was on my brain. I was saying it when I met somebody else. It's funny when I look back on it now.
Yeah, I mean, my geeky brain loves statistics and numbers, so it's always good to talk about that. And, again, delineating and analyzing Scott's show yesterday with Art Jones, and who knows whom Scott may have on next. Ed Johnston and I asked if he could get Dr. Phil on, and who knows, Scott may very well have him on tomorrow. You don't know it with Scott. His array of guests on his program, again, it's called Now. It's on Monday through Thursday between 12:13 p.m. and 2. Never quite know. And Dr. Ruth, again, if you miss that interview, please go to our website, wwgh1071.com. Go to the Now with Scott Spear section, celebrity interviews, and listen to the interview with Dr. Ruth. It was outstanding. Hope I'm half that feisty.
May I add one more thing? Yes. The singer Vic Damone died over the weekend. I'm curious, was he ever on WWGH? He was 89 years old when he died.
I can check. I don't know for sure, but I will ask Scott, because there have been people that I would have liked to have him to have had on, and I didn't think that he had them on. It might have been when he was with WMRN also. It says he's been in talk radio for many years. And tell you, Ron, half the time I ask if he's had somebody on, he says, oh, yeah, she was on a couple times. So you never really know. So before I say no, I will ask Scott. And if the answer is that he had Vic Damone on, I wouldn't be surprised. You never quite know.
And if he did, he should run it again.
Yeah, I'll check. That's a good question.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thanks again, Dr. Ron Fineman, for being on the show.
Thank you so much again for inviting me.
For being on with Scott last week. Have a great rest of your Tuesday.
You too.